ever made it into that Billboard Hot 100, let alone inside the top 40. Released in January 1980, the song Turning Japanese is the Vapor's lone hit single, reaching only as high as number 36. It did, however, fare considerably better in Canada, New Zealand, and their native UK, where it climbed into the top 10 into each of those countries. And crikey, it went all the way to the top spot in Australia, where it was at number one for 2 weeks. And oh yeah, not surprising, but it was also a minor success in Japan. As one of the more misinterpreted songs of all time, the long-standing speculation was that Turning Japanese refers to the Asian facial features people get at the moment of climax during masturbation. The Vapor's lead singer and the song's writer, David Fenton, in an old VH1 special, has said that he wished to thank whoever first came up with that interpretation because he felt the rumor's salaciousness may have been what made the song a hit. Perhaps a salty rumor? I don't know. In reality, the band has explained that it's actually a love song about a dude who lost his girlfriend and who's slowly going crazy. According to Fenton, quote, "Turning Japanese is all the cliches about angst and youth and turning into something you didn't expect to." Discovered and managed in 1978 by Bruce Foxton of The Jam, and besides David Fenton on lead vocals, The Vapors also consisted of Edward Basil Gett on guitar, Steve Smith on bass, and Howard Smith on their drum. And ironically, despite The Vapors enjoying only a single top 40 hit in America, there's still one more top 40 hit than Bruce Foxton and The Jam ever charted here in America. The Jam didn't have anything. Let me also note that recognizable opening riff in the song, it's actually called the Oriental Riff, and it's often used in Western songs when they want to invoke the Far East. Two well-known popular examples of the Carl Douglas, Kung Fu Fighting, and Susie and the Banshees with Hong Kong Garden. From 1980, Turning Japanese by The Vapors is coming up. But first, also from the early 80s, and specifically 1981, is vocalist Mark Almond and the instrumentalist David Ball, collectively known as the English synth-pop duo Soft Cell. The two having first met as students in West Yorkshire, England, at Leeds Art College in 1977, formed the act the following year after they both had embraced electronic music, and they were working to give it a less mechanized or computerized sound. In a Rolling Stone magazine interview, Almond told music journalist Steve Pons that both he and Ball knew that they were after, quote, people were using, they knew what they were after, quote, people were using electronics in unfeeling, robotic ways, but Dave gave us these rich, warm, moody sounds, exciting and slightly dirty sounds. After a couple failed singles, Soft Cell recorded and released their cover version of an obscure 1965 soul song entitled Tainted Love, originally performed 16 years earlier by Gloria Jones. By the way, Gloria Jones, on a fascinating side note, was the girlfriend of singer-musician Mark Bolan, and she was the driver of the vehicle the night that he was sadly killed in that car crash. This is the same Mark Bolan who was the lead singer of the band T-Rex, themselves one-hit wonders, famous for 1972's Get It On, Bang A Gong. Getting back to Tainted Love, it's a monster of a song that was written by Ed Cobb, who was the manager of arguably two of the earliest iterations of garage rock punk bands, the Standells and Chocolate Watch Band. Yeah, Chocolate Watch Band. Don't ask. Tainted Love, it's about a toxic relationship from the point of view of the person who, despite realizing it's time to get out of it, move on and leave, still struggles to go. The song's writer Ed Cobb told Blender Magazine, quote, I had a lover for whom you could say wasn't a good individual. I tried to go into her head and write a song from her standpoint. Once the word tainted had popped into my head, the song was written very quickly, probably 15 minutes. I mentioned Tainted Love is a monster of a song. Soft Cell's version, again released in 1981, sold over a million copies throughout the United Kingdom, where it went to number one, as well as 16 other countries. Here in America, Tainted Love spent an incredibly mind-boggling 43 straight weeks, that's 10 straight months, on the Hot 100 pop chart, and in doing so set what became, at the time, the Guinness World Record for U.S. chart longevity. Fascinating. 10 continuous months on the Hot 100, and yet in all that time, the song never went to number one. In fact, it never peaked higher than number eight. And what's more, with all their success overseas, around the world, in different countries, the truth is that here in the United States, Tainted Love is and still remains Soft Cell's only ever single to appear on any American chart. Featuring a music style of backing vocals that were copied from the song Heart Full of Soul by the Yardbirds, and with the recorded vocals being singer Mark Almond's first take, spinning up now on the Tampa Turntable Sessions, it's One Hit Wonders, Soft Cell, with Tainted Love on HCC's Hawk Radio. Welcome on in. Thank you.
Joe Hatchy.
You're tuned into HCC's Hawk Radio. I'm Mike Frazier, your host of the Tampa Turntable Sessions, where this week our session topic is one-hit wonders. In that all 80s set that just wrapped up, you heard Soft Cell with 1981's Tainted Love and The Vapors with 1980's Turning Japanese. Sandwiched right in between was English new wave supergroup General Public with Tenderness. I call them a supergroup because General Public was formed from the ashes following the breakup of the new wave ska band The Beat, or the English Beat, as they were known as here in North America, when vocalist Dave Wakeling and ranking Roger Charlery joined up with bassist Horace Panter, who just left the group The Specials. Also was guitarist Mick Jones, who had just been fired from The Clash, and keyboardist Mickey Billingham and drummer Andrew Grocott, both most recently members who had just left the group Dexy's Midnight Runner. Dexy's Midnight Runners, a group, by the way, that I'll be talking about more on next week's show. According to Wakeling, the song Tenderness started as an English beat song but never made it before they broke up, so instead it was recorded in late 1983 for General Public's debut studio album entitled All the Rage. And it was then released as a single the following year in May of 84. Undoubtedly, a lot of the song's success benefited from appearing in two of director John Hughes' considerably popular films at that time, one called 16 Candles from 1984, and then the following year, 1985's Weird Science. A benefit that resulted in Tenderness cracking the top 40 and going to number 27 on the Hot 100 chart for general public. A band of musicians, once called a supergroup, but today now known as a one-hit wonder. 19 minutes past the hour, we're going to fall back another decade to revisit some songs of the 70s in our next set here. White Plains, Edison Lighthouse, Brotherhood of Man, The Pipkins, and The First Class. All five bands were from the 70s. All five bands were one-hit wonders. And to say there's this one guy who's a five-time one-hit wonder, it doesn't make any sense because it defies the term one-hit wonder. And yet it's true, because astonishingly, all five of those bands had the same lead singer. Quote, "I never figured on being a musician," said Tony Burrows, the man who fronted more one-hit wonder acts than anyone else. According to music journalist Wayne Jancic, writer-producer Tony McCalley needed a session singer to bring life to a bubblegummy pop tune called Love Grows Where My Rosemary Goes. So he approached Burrows on this. In November 1969, McCauley laid down the song's basic drum loop, layered in a Fender guitar and some bass, and then had an afternoon session with a couple of orchestral strings and brass musicians, who interestingly improvised the introduction of the song. That same afternoon, session musician Tony Burrows came in and was asked to sing the lyrics in a rather nasally-sounding, uncharacteristic pitch. After just 40 minutes, Burrows had finished laying down the vocals. Less than 2 months later, and in spite of the fact that it wasn't really a band, but rather a one-time group of studio musicians, Love Grows Where My Rosemary Goes, as performed by Edison Lighthouse, was released on January 9th, 1970, in the UK. Incredibly, only a week and a half later, it entered their top 40 at number 12. Then amazingly, the following week on January 31st, that catchy song went all the way up, shot up to number one, where it stayed there for an impressive 5 weeks. And in doing so, made Love Grows Where My Rosemary Goes the fastest climbing number one hit record in charted music history up to that point. Issued in the U.S. on February 21st, 1970, the song first showed up on the Billboard Hot 100 at the number 68 spot, only a week after its release. A month later, on March 28th, Love Grows reached its highest point position, having made it up to the number 5 spot, and then remaining there for a couple of weeks before eventually exiting the top 40 in late May, but not before having sold a certified 1 million copies of the 45 single, again, here in the U.S. Also here in the U.S., the Edison Lighthouse version of Love Grows Where My Rosemary Goes, it came close to being covered by the Grassroots, who were an already well-established top 40 hit-making pop group, which really could have made the song's history very, very much different. But according to a 2003 article in the Toledo Blade newspaper, they passed reportedly because Grassroots frontman Rob Grill wasn't on board for singing a love song that might be thought to refer to co-member Warren Entner's wife, Rosemarie Franklin. From 1970, you're going to hear from Edison Lighthouse with Love Grows Where My Rosemary Goes. Before then, though, and let me come clean first, I told you that this next set of music was all from the 70s. I'm going to sneak a song in that technically is from 1969, where after spending four months after its June release, slowly clawed its way up the charts. It peaked at number 5 on the Hot 100 on November 22nd, 1969. Yet even after that, Smile, A Little Smile for Me from the Flying Machine still continued to receive considerable popularity airplay. on popular radio, into the 70s on both top 40 and adult contemporary radio stations. The song tells the story from the singer's point of view, encouraging the woman named Rosemarie to smile in spite of her sorrow and tears and the difficulty she's having with coming to terms at the end of a tumultuous relationship with her lover. And probably because he's hoping that one day she'll be his lover and will just smile for him. Just like Love Grows Where My Rosemary Goes by Edison Lighthouse, Smile a Little Smile for Me by The Flying Machine, both were just a group of British studio musicians. And just like Love Grows Where My Rosemary Goes by Edison Lighthouse, Smile a Little Smile for Me by The Flying Machine, both were written by Tony McCauley. But while Love Grows Where My Rosemary Goes, Smile a Little Smile for Me is meant for Rosemarie. The Flying Machine from 1996, I'm sorry, from 1990, that's right. My notes are out of order here. The Flying Machine from 1969 and 1970, they're going to be up right after our next song by American R&B singer Gene Knight. Gene Knight. On May 17th, 1970, a year prior to its release, the New Orleans native took time off from her job as a cafeteria baker at St. Mary's Dominican College to travel on over to Malico Studios in Jackson, Mississippi to record a song called Mr. Big Stuff. At first, Knight wasn't sure the kind of sound that they wanted out of her, but in the studio that day just happened to be pop music composer and writer Albert Savoy. He told her, quote, "Gene, everybody knows you're flip and sassy," said Gene to author Mark Taylor for his book, A Touch of Class, Soul Singers of the Early 1970s. "Just approach the song like you're sacking a guy out. It felt right, so I just took it and went with it." Defined by two-bar offbeat bass lines and written by Creole Beethoven, Wardell Kayser, Mr. Big Stuff addresses a ladies' man with means by letting him know that she's not going to be falling for his charms, she's not impressed with his fancy clothes, and she's not impressed with his big, fine car. And that he can't break her heart because she ain't never going to give him the chance to break that heart. The man for her, it's one with a love that's true, even if he's broke. Just wait till she gets a load of me then. Ah, man, I'm her dream come true. Released in May of 1971 by Stax Records, the song spent 5 weeks at number one on the Billboard Soul Singles chart, and on August 14th, peaked at number two on the Hot 100 chart. Having been certified as double platinum, selling 2 million copies, it's ranked as 1971's 18th biggest pop song and the number one soul song for the year before receiving a Grammy nomination for Best Female R&B Vocal Performance. A gigantic top 40 in R&B hit here in the U.S. for Gene Knight, and unfortunately her only one ever. When not working as a nurse, Knight continued to make live appearances well into her late 60s. A little over a year ago, Knight passed away the day before Thanksgiving, 2023, while living here in Tampa, Florida. Gone but not forgotten, because here now on Hawk Radio is Louisiana Music Hall of Fame inductee Gene Knight, and from 1971, Mr. Big Stuff on the Tampa Turntable Sessions.
Gonna get my love. be fooled around and get hurt by you. 'Cause when I give my love, I want love in return. This is a lesson, Mr. Vista, you have learned. Mr. Vista, tell me,
who do you think you are, Mr. Vista? You're never gonna get my love, Mr. Vista. You're never gonna break my heart.
Come back now, even though he said he would. So darling, dry your eyes. So many other guys would give the world, I'm sure, to wear the shoes he wore. Oh, come on.
Smile a little smile for me, Rosemary.
Coming to an end, but darling, only now are you free to start again. Lift up your pretty chin, don't let those tears begin. You're a big girl now, and you'll pull through somehow. Oh, come on,
smile a little smile for me.
Madison Lighthouse with Love Grows Where My Rosemary Goes. Just can't seem to keep that darn dog down these days. It's the Tampa Turntable Sessions on HCC's Hawk Radio. I'm Mike Frazier, your host, as we're recognizing one-hit wonders on this hour's show. 35 minutes past the hour, and quick time out, as I like to do around this time on each show, and say a quick hello to a couple of the movers and shakers who've checked in already with us today. Freshly transplanted from the sands of Nevada deserts to become Florida's newest resident, leaving the door open and keeping it nice and cold down here in South Florida. Let's say hello to Heather, listening to the show and enjoying the sands now in nearby Lakewood Ranch. I say enjoying because that might be a stretch with today's show. I don't know if you're enjoying it or not. In Arizona, listening to us live on hawkradio.primostream.com is Bob out of Scottsdale. Also in Arizona, and listening to us live is Scott out of Bobsdale. Actually, it's my old friend Jason. No, I mean, he's my old friend Jason. I mean, he's really old. The dude is 72 years old. And I'm sorry, wait a minute, I read that wrong. He was born in 1972, so. But I'll tell you what, at that being born in 72, you're not too far off from being 72 years old. We're not too far off from being 72 years old. One of Tampa's finest officers, Nicholas, will be checking this out on our YouTube channel, as will be Tampa International Airport's hardest working employee and my best friend, Dawn. Oop, there we go. Although with season here, it's going to sound a lot more like that with the cash register. All right, all right, all right. Enough with the cash registers. I'd be remiss and I'd be quite remiss if I didn't send a bespoke acknowledgement to my loyalist listeners, Jordan and John, down near Fort Myers, thanking them for this fine Christmas gift of a splendidly gorgeous thesaurus that they gave me. Bespoke, remiss, learned what those words were. My colleagues with Mainsail Lodging and Development over at the Fenway Hotel in Dunedin, Waterline Resort on Anna Maria Island, and again down into Fort Myers at the Luminary Hotel, there on the riverfront. That's the Luminary Hotel. They are located down there in Fort Myers on the riverfront. I used to work there at one time, long ago in a previous life. Let me see. Who else checked in here? I've got Cindy, Dave, and Bob. They're in Indiana. Eric, too. Stacy in Chicagoland. Joe and Rebecca in Southwest Florida, as well as Eric A. From North Carolina, I say hello to Craig out in Idaho. Idaho? What? It's Mark out there. Thank you, Mark. And I didn't forget about you, Belize, here in Tampa. I thank you for listening. I thank all of you for listening and allowing me to hopefully provide you with a little bit of entertainment and some of this new and some new music knowledge on some of these old songs. So let me know you're listening at hawkradio.primostream.com/live, or if you're watching our video stream either live or on demand by browsing to Mike Frazier. It's at Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube.com. And be sure you mash that like button. So now, where the hell else are we at these days? Let's see, we got Real Mike Frazier on X. You can email MikeFrazierRadio@gmail.com. Calling us here in the studio, 813-614-3616. Launching soon at MikeFrazierRadio.com. And, coming really soon to Pornhub and OnlyFans. Okay, not really. Maybe. No, not really. And also, check this out. Some history today. In 1964, sporting the subtitle England's number one vocal group, Introducing the Beatles is released by VJ Records 10 days before Capitol Records debuts the massive chart topper Meet the Beatles. That was in 1964. So, great day in history. And whereas some of these one-hit wonder artists and groups existed for just a short time, others lasted a longer time, as did the lengths of the songs. In fact, the 1960s contains two songs that either, let me see if I got that right here. So I'm sorry, yeah, We're pivoting back to the show now. So thank you. Thank you. I'm getting word in my ear here that you didn't pivot right. So thank you, guys. In fact, 1960, it contains two songs at either end of the song length spectrum. On the high side from 1968, it's the top 30 hit called Inagata De Vida by Iron Butterfly. It holds the maximum length record at 17 minutes and 5 seconds. So long, in fact, that the song, it's the only song on the entire B-side of the LP that it was on. Oppositely, Stay, the 1960 number one R&B doo-wop song by Maurice and the Zodiacs, barely registers at the low end of that same song length spectrum. It clocks in at only 1 minute and 36 seconds, which coincidentally, that's also the same amount of time that it takes Joey Chestnut to eat 14 hot dogs. Fun fact. Stay was written 5 years earlier in 1955 when Maurice Williams was 17 years old. In a 2012 interview with Our State magazine out of North Carolina, the story goes that he was desperate to keep his girlfriend's company, begging and pleading with his sweetheart to extend the night's courtship at his parents' home in Lancaster, South Carolina. But in 1950s America, and at 10 p.m., it was already past time to go their separate ways, and because the girlfriend's parents were very strict about her curfew, Williams had to watch as her brother picked her up and drove off to take her home. No more sharing of hopes or dreams or living together that night at all. And as any guy will attest, when he's a teenager, spending time with your love interest on any night that ends too soon, it creates immense frustration and angst. Maurice Williams found inspiration in his frustration, waking up the following morning, put pen to paper, and wrote down his feelings. Quote, like a flood, the words just came to me. Those feelings became the lyrics for Stay. 5 years later, in 1960, after shopping around the demo, Williams and his young band called the Zodiacs got a break when Herald Records out of New Jersey picked up the song. But the record label's owner, Al Silver, insisted that the song be re-recorded for three reasons. One, the demo's recording levels were too low. Two, add Zodiac bandmate Henry Gaston's falsetto chorus. Three, remove the lyric where they sang, let's have another smoke, so that it'd be more friendly for commercial radio airplay. They did all three, and it all came together on November 21st, 1960, when Maurice Williams and the Zodiacs made it to the number one spot on the Hot 100 chart with Stay. Today, over 64 years later, the one-hit wonder song has sold more than 8 million copies, and it's coming up. Don't go far, because at 96 seconds, you just might miss it if you walk away. I'm also going to play a classic 1966 song that was one of the first R&B hit singles to have been recorded in the United Kingdom, and what AllMusic.com's John Bush has described as being, quote, driven by one of the catchiest guitar hooks in the history of rock and roll, and a devastating vocal performance. The song is called But It's All Right, and it was written and recorded by native Arkansan soul singer J.J. Jackson after his manager sent him to go find some work in England. When first released on the independent Calla Records label, it charted up to the number 22 position on the Hot 100. Unable to recreate, Jackson never had a substantial follow-up hit. That was until 3 years later, when after Warner Brothers bought Calla, they reissued But It's All Right in 1969, and it charted again, this time up to number 45. But all things considered, you can't follow up your only top 40 song with the exact same song and still not be considered a one-hit wonder artist. It doesn't work that way, unfortunately, JJ. From 1966, J.J. Jackson's But It's All Right is also around the corner. But Due Up Now, it's called a teaser, but Due Up Now is Doris Payne, who started her career as a backup session singer, appearing on recordings by Solomon Burke, Dee Dee Warwick, The Drifters, and Benny King. In early 1963, Payne recorded a demo that she co-wrote with R&B singer-producer Gregory Carroll. Now, for a long time, the story went that after legendary James Brown saw Doris Payne performing in a nightclub, he introduced her to Atlantic Records. However, according to a more recent and detailed story in author David Nathan's 1999 book Soulful Divas, Payne recorded a studio demo of the next song and first took it to Sue Records. However, their lack of interest led her to offer it to renowned pop music producer Jerry Wexler over at Atlantic Records. Then, very quickly, Atlantic turned around, released the demo unchanged as a single. The only thing they had her change was her name. And it was then that Doris Payne became professionally known as Doris Troy. In May 1963, Troy scored her only U.S. hit with Just One Look, a song that spent 14 weeks on the Billboard Hot 100 and peaking at number 10 on July 27th. In spite of today being known as a one-hit wonder, Doris Troy remained working as a session singer, going on to perform on the Rolling Stones' 1968 song, You Can't Always Get What You Want, various tracks by Tom Jones and Engelbert Humperdinck, and ultimately as the prominent backup singer on the record-setting 1973 Pink Floyd album, Dark Side of the Moon. That's her singing. This is Doris Troy now with Just One Look on HCC's Hawk Radio, where you're listening to One Hit Wonders on the Tampa Turntable Sessions. Go!
Just one look, and I felt so hot. Thank you.
It's One Hit Wonders on today's Tampa Turntable Sessions on Hawk Radio. J.J. Jackson from 1966 with But That's All Right. And fans of early MTV will think of the original VJ on the network when you hear the name J.J. Jackson. But it's my job to set the record straight and to let you know, for real, they are two different people altogether. MTV's J.J. Jackson, Triple J, was a radio DJ and one of the few African-Americans to DJ on album rock radio stations, like the legendary WBCN in Boston and KLOS and Carol Q FM over there in Burning Los Angeles. Many years ago, before the city caught on fire, of course, that is. In 1976, he was featured in a voice-only performance as a DJ on fictional KGYS in the movie Car Wash at the Car Wash. In 2004, DJ VJ JJ Jackson died at age 62 after suffering a heart attack. The other JJ Jackson, the one-hit wonder you just heard, who sang But That's All Right, he's still alive and kicking at 82 years old. I'm Mike Frazier, and I see we're quickly running out of time, but before I leave, let's head to the 1990s to finish out today. Jump Around. It's a 1992 song by American hip-hop group House of Pain. House of Pain was the Los Angeles trio of rapper Eric Everlast Schrody, DJ Danny Boy O'Connor, and Lear DJ Lethal Dement, taking their name from the place where the awful experiments took place in the 1977 film The Island of Dr. Moreau. After being signed with the pioneering hip-hop label Tommy Boy Records, the label assigned House of Pain an Irish motif, which the group played upon, with a Shamrock logo and lots of songs about drinking and fighting. Shenanigans, hooligans. Jump Around was their first single. It earned relentless airplay on both MTV and Top 40 radio and became a huge crowd pleaser in bars and dance clubs. Great for getting people on the dance floor as no real dancing is involved, just jumping around. Everlast wrote the song with DJ Muggs, Lawrence Muggard, of Cypress Hill, who also produced the track. And while it does feature some live instruments, including guitars, Jump Around is mostly just made up of samples. The song features a distinctive horn fanfare intro sampled from the Bob and Earl 1963 track Harlem Shuffle, later covered by the Rolling Stones. It also samples Popeye the Hitchhiker by Chubby Checker. But Jump Around is probably best known for a high-pitched squealing sound that appears at the beginning of almost every bar 66 times in the course of the recording. That squeal that kicks up the song's energy is either a saxophone sample from the song Shoot Your Shot by Junior Walker and the All-Stars, or it's Prince's scream from the 1991 track Get Off. Curiously, after a 2016 Newsweek magazine investigation, Everlast took to Twitter to write, quote, "There is absolutely no Prince sample in Jump Around. Way off. It's a horn, FYI." But self-proclaimed Prince scholar Questlove insists it is from Get Off. The song also borrows elements from Tramp by Lowell Folsom and Harvey Arvern's You're No Good. As a party jam, it's one of the most enduring tracks of the 90s, proving remarkably effective at getting a crowd on its feet. Plus, it gives pretty simple, explicit instructions on when it's time to jump. And jumping was a pretty big thing in 1992 hip-hop. In April of that year, the teenage duo Criss Cross went to number one in America with their song Jump, where they promised to make you jump. A group called The Movement reached number 53 in August with the club banger Jump, where over and over they implore, jump, everybody, jump. There's also White Men Can't Jump by Riff, which reached number 90 in May, but I don't think that really applies here or to this conversation. Jump Around came after all of those, reaching its Billboard Hot 100 chart peak position of number 3 in October 1992. Though the last Jumper release was Punk's Jump Up to Get Beat Down by Brand Nubian, which topped out at number 77 the following January of 1993. House of Pain split after releasing an album in 1996 that went nowhere, but Tommy Boy Records kept Everlast on as a solo artist, and in 1998, he released his first album, Whitey Ford Sings the Blues, with the surprisingly mellow and introspective hit called What It's Like. DJ Lethal became a member of the band Limp Bizkit, and Danny Boy O'Connor now works at Burger King. I'm only kidding about that. I mean, to call DJ Lethal a member of Limp Bizkit, why, that's just ridiculous. So, Jump Around. It's a song Everlast dedicated to Joe the Biter Nicolo. So grab the Bozek, punk. But wait, before you start grabbing nuts, up first are alternative rockers, the Proclaimers. Twins Craig and Charlie Reed performing a song that took 5 years, 5 years after its release to become their only U.S. hit. First appearing in 1988 on their album Sunshine on Leith, it only became a hit after being featured without the band's knowledge in the 1993 movie Benny and June, starring Johnny Depp and Mary Stuart Masterson. It's a very catchy, upbeat song, and it's about being devoted to a woman and wanting to spend the rest of your life with her. And it's all sung with a Scottish accent. Even the line, I'm going to be the one who's havering for you. Havering, which means indecisive and babbling on. So, quickly, the team and I, we never knew that, and in doing the research on the song, we thought havering meant something, I don't know, much more adult-oriented, I mean, suggestive, self-gratifying, if you catch my drift. You know, maybe something that involves grabbing your Bozek and turning Japanese, I don't know. How about you? Maybe take a listen now and reevaluate for yourself, Mr. Jack Mayhofer. Smiling from 1988, it's the Proclaimers on Hawk Radio with their 1993 Billboard Hot 100 Top 40 number 3 one hit wonder. I'm gonna be 500 miles on the Tampa Turntable Sessions.
When I wake up, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who wakes up next to you. When I go out, yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you. If I get drunk, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who gets drunk next to you. And if I haver, yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who's havering to you. But I would walk 500 miles and I would walk 500 more to be the man who walked 1,000 miles to fall down at your door. And I'm working, yes, I know I'm gonna be the man who's working hard for you. And when the money comes in for the work I do, I'll pass almost every penny on to you. When I come home, I'm gonna be the man who comes back home to you. And if I broke, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who's growing over you. But I would walk 500 miles and I would walk 500 more just to be a man who walks 1,000 miles to fall down at your door. When I'm lonely, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who's lonely without you. And when I'm dreaming, well, I know I'm gonna dream about the time when I'm with you. When I go out, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you. And when I come home, yes, I know I'm gonna be the man who comes back home with you. I'm gonna be the man who's coming home.